and the other determines who could serve the next full term. Some of the candidates are Denny, which is the Director of Civic Engagement at Chico State and has positioned herself as the progressive voice in the race. Gallagher is an agricultural attorney and recently a Republican minority leader in the state assembly. McGuire comes from a family of farmers and has served in the state senate since 2014. Key issues in the race reflect concerns across the North State: wildfire recovery and prevention, water access, rural infrastructure, and the local economy, public safety, housing, and state-federal coordination are also expected to play a role in how candidates frame their campaigns. Local officials are encouraging residents to pay close attention to their ballots, read candidate statements carefully, and make a plan to vote, whether by mail or in person. For voters in communities like Oroville and surrounding areas, this election adds weight. Representation at the federal level can directly affect funding for infrastructure, disaster recovery, and regional development. With a lot that's happening this election season, staying informed matters more than ever. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
Earlier this week, KZFR Public Affairs programmer Chris Nelson had the opportunity to speak to Democracy Now! Host Amy Goodman. What follows is part of that interview.
Amy Goodman and Steal This Story Please documentary maker Tia Lesson are joining us at KZFR from Hot Docs Toronto, where the film is opening tonight with a sold-out crowd of 650 people, the first film in this year's Hot Docs Festival to elicit that kind of response. Welcome to KZFR on behalf of all of us who start our days each weekday with Democracy Now! From 8 to 9 a.m. Amy Goodman has been the main host and executive producer of the award-winning Democracy Now! Since 1996. Democracy Now! Is an independent global news program that she co-founded and is syndicated nationally on radio, television, and internet. Democracy Now! Covers breaking news and in-depth interviews and is broadcast on more than 1,500 public radio and television stations worldwide. It is considered the largest public media collaboration in the United States. Democracy Now! Elevates voices and perspectives rarely covered in corporate media. Amy, can you address Democracy Now!'s success and what your hopes for the future are, especially seeing the incredible response to Steal This Story, Please?
Well, on that last point, the incredible response to Steal the Story, Please, that credit goes to the directors. They're Oscar-nominated directors, Tia Lesson, who you'll hear from in a minute, and Carl Diehl. They were nominated for an Oscar for Trouble the Water about Hurricane Katrina. Tia just recently won 3 Emmys for her documentary that called The Janes, about the underground abortion network in Chicago in the 60s. They did Citizen Coke. They were Michael Moore's producers, and they've done so much more. So this film has gone around the country to the different film festivals, like Santa Barbara, like Mill Valley, like Santa Fe, St. Louis, Seattle, Woodstock, Savannah, Georgia. And it's won more than a dozen audience favorite awards, not only for best documentary, but sometimes for just best film overall and grand jury prizes. It has been astounding, the response, the hunger for independent voices right now. But it's also a testament to their prowess, to their incredible sensibility about how to make a documentary, how to tell stories. Now, Democracy Now! Is celebrating 30 years, Chris. We just had our 30th anniversary at Riverside Church, that iconic church in Harlem where Dr. Martin Luther King gave his anti-Vietnam speech, his speech against the war in Vietnam. And he gave that speech a year to the day before he was assassinated. He gave the speech April 4th, 1967. And on March 23rd, 2,000 people packed into the church for the 30th anniversary. And oh, Juan gave an amazing address. Juan Gonzalez, who's been with Democracy Now! Co-hosting for 30 years. And we played a clip of Steal the Story, Please, that tells his story about how he was one of the founders of the Young Lords in New York, equivalent to the Puerto Rican Black Panthers. And he describes how one of the reasons the Young Lords was so successful is they recognized early on that you have to control the narrative, that you have to tell your own story and make the media do that. Ultimately, that small circle in the inner circle of Young Lords, almost all of them became nationally known journalists. After Juan spoke, Hooray for the Riff Raff sang Palante, which was the name of his newspaper, Ever Forward. And then Michael Stipe sang of REM, and Angela Davis came out from your state of California and talked about her own life and the importance of independent media. Masab Abu Toha, the Pulitzer Prize-winning Palestinian poet who wrote these series of essays in The New Yorker, read his poem Under the Rubble. Patti Smith sang Peaceable Kingdom. Nermeen Sheikh gave an incredible speech where she talked about Democracy Now! Expanding the frame to allow in more voices, not just in the frame, but centering those voices. And then, well, the playwright, well-known, formerly named Eve Ensler. And then we looked out in the crowd and said, we're not sure how to end this 30 years as we move on to the next half century. And, oh, maybe that man in the audience can help us, Bruce Springsteen. And he came up and he sang Streets of Minneapolis, and all the musicians came out and sang Patti Smith's iconic song, People Have the Power, right? And that is the theme, I would say, of Democracy Now! Yeah. It's people who have the power. Yes, the president of the United States might occupy the most powerful position on earth, but there is a force more powerful. And it is people all over this country, people who listen to KZFR, people who listen to KPFA, people who listen to Democracy Now!, who come into the movie theaters, like I hope they go into the pageant theater May 1st through 3rd, and gather together hundreds of people. It's people who ultimately decide the direction of this country and countries all over the world. And we need a media that documents that. And that's what Democracy Now! Does every day, is we go to where the silence is. Where the media dare not go, but where most people are. And I think that's its success. And especially now, people are tired of the squelching of voices, of the crackdown on, for example, immigrants, on people being afraid. People are organizing, and we need a media that shows that mechanism, how people are coming together, that builds community.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. At the Board of Supervisors meeting, Item 4.8 on the agenda approved a contract with Knife River Construction for the construction of the South Oroville Safe Routes to Schools project. This project is part of a broader statewide and national effort to improve safety for students who walk or bike to school, particularly in communities where infrastructure has historically been limited or outdated. Some of these plans include upgraded sidewalks, improved crosswalks, better signage, and traffic safety enhancements designed to slow vehicles and increase visibility around school zones. The goal is simple but significant: to reduce the risk of accidents and make it easier and safer for students to travel to and from school. During the meeting, county staff outlined the scope and importance of this project, emphasizing that Safe Routes to Schools programs don't just improve safety, but they also encourage healthier habits like walking and biking, while reducing traffic congestion and around campuses. The contract approval with Knife River Construction moves the project from planning into the construction phase, marking a key milestone after months, if not years, of preparation, funding coordination, and design work. According to a representative at the meeting, they stated,
"So on late October of 2025, the board authorized Public Works to advertise and solicit bids for this project, which is included in the Public Works Infrastructure Master Plan. The project is located in the South Oroville area along Monta Vista Avenue, Autry Lane, and Lower Wyandotte Road. And the project will improve connectivity to the South Side and area schools, to supervisor's comment, enhancing pedestrian and bicycle mobility, improve signage, flashing beacons, pedestrian signalization, and driver feedback signs will enhance Safeway within the school zone. The project includes upgraded sidewalks and drainage and restoration of the roadway utilizing full depth reclamation with cement. The project was advertised March 11th of this year, and three bids were received and opened on April 1st. The lowest responsive and responsible bidder was Knife River Construction out of Chico with a bid of $5,146,876. And the department therefore recommends that the board approve the project plans and specifications, award the contract to Knife River Construction, and authorize the Director of Public Works to sign the contract and any change orders or additions in work performed per public contract code section 20142. The funding is included in the department's 2526 road fund budget, paid with ATP or Active Transportation Program grant funds.
Funding for projects like this one often comes from a mix of local, state, and sometimes federal sources, with a focus on equity, bringing improvements to underserved areas that need them most. South Oroville has been identified as one of those priority areas. For South Oroville, this project represents more than just new sidewalks or painted crosswalks. It's an investment in safety, in public health, and in the daily lives of students and families. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
This is Patrice for Chico Soul. This week, a GOP-backed initiative to require voter identification at the polls, and a Shasta Scout story about local law enforcement in cooperation with federal immigration authorities. We also report on the Chico City Council's decision on the feasibility of legalizing commercial cannabis cultivation. In statewide election news, Chico Soul has posted stories from CalMatters in both English and Spanish that explain a GOP-backed initiative that will be on the statewide November 3rd ballot. It will require voters to show proof of citizenship when voting. If approved, California would become one of 37 states requiring or recommending voter identification at the polls. For years, Republicans have been pushing for tighter voter restrictions in the majority Democrat state. While voter fraud is rare in California, claims of fraud have risen since President Donald Trump claimed that the 2020 election was stolen. Currently, voters only need to provide an ID and Social Security number when registering to vote. If the initiative is approved in November, California will require voters to show government-issued IDs at the polls. Mail-in ballots will require the last four digits of an ID. Voting rights groups say the initiative will suppress turnout among eligible voters who don't have the documents on hand, many of whom are disproportionately poor and people of color. Labor unions plan to campaign heavily against it. In reporting on the immigration crackdown, Chico Soul shares a story from Shasta Scout, showing the Shasta County Sheriff's Office giving Immigration and Customs Enforcement information about seven jail inmates in 2025. This is the most information given since the agency was required to publicly announce cooperation with ICE. Undersheriff Gene Randall told the Board of Supervisors that federal law enforcement agents issued 33 requests for information about incarcerated non-citizens. Only 7 of them have met the criteria for their information to be shared with ICE under state law. Randall provided no explanation for what led the sheriff's office to reach that conclusion and refused to answer questions from a reporter following the meeting. This is in contrast to 2024, when the sheriff's office shared information about a single individual and shared the reason why, saying they were wanted under a federal warrant. Chico Sol submitted a public records request last December to the Tehama County Sheriff's Office for ICE communications that took place in 2025. Chico Sol has been promised records on May 17th. In more immigration news, American Community Media reports on how Trump's anti-immigration policies are worsening America's doctor shortage. Here's Zhao Wang, CEO and co-founder of Boundless Immigration, explaining the consequences of these policies.
Focusing on just rural healthcare as a spotlight for a moment, the Association of American Medical Colleges project that United States could face a physician shortage of up to 86,000 doctors by 2036. At the same time, immigrants account for over a quarter of all physicians working in U.S. hospitals. And the shortage is even more urgent and prevalent in rural America, where an analysis in 2025 found that immigrants make up of only 5% of the overall rural workforce, but 14% of physicians and surgeons in rural America. So if you think about what those consequences mean, if you have a modest amount of international physicians, nurses, and other clinicians and healthcare workers decide that America is becoming too unstable of a place to raise their family, and the first places to feel it will not necessarily be the wealthy urban hospital systems, but there'll be these rural hospitals already struggling to recruit. And it will be these nursing homes that can't find enough aides and the long-term care providers, right, deciding if they can safely staff another set of beds or wings. And it's these older Americans, disabled Americans, families in small towns and rural communities who will bear the largest burden of longer wait times, fewer providers, and more fragile care.
Scroll down Chico Sol's homepage to the video feature to hear more from Wang. In local news, Chris Hutton reports that the Chico City Council voted 5-2 to further explore the feasibility of legalizing commercial cannabis cultivation. Voting in opposition were Councilmember Mike O'Brien, who is also commander of Butte Interagency Narcotics Task Force, and Councilmember Tom Van Overbeek. This has been Patrice for Chico Sol. Follow the latest at chicosol.org. At chicosol.org, you can also subscribe to our free weekly newsletter, The Little Sun, to get notified about new content and hear directly from our writers.
You're listening to the Orion News Weekly Report, brought to you by California State University Chico, KZFR, KCSC, and KWQA Maker Radio.
ChatGPT arrived on campus in early April 2025. Since then, Chico State has been installing artificial intelligence systems throughout the campus. The California State University system paid nearly $17 million for OpenAI's artificial intelligence model geared for education. Now, the contract is being renegotiated, and Students for Quality Education is calling on students and staff not to renew the agreement. The contract for ChatGPT is set to expire on June 30th.
The Chico State Wildcats baseball team split its 4-game series against number 10-ranked Cal State Monterey Bay in their final home series of the season. Needing to start the series off strong against a difficult opponent, the Cats turned to senior right-hand pitcher Rocco Borelli, who has won his last 5 starts. The Cats stole the series opener 6-1, rallying off Keone Coloma's first home run of the season. After a dominant victory, the Cats looked to repeat their performance in Game 2 by giving the ball to freshman right-hand pitcher Jack Tews. The Cats scored their first 2 runs of the game in the 5th inning after Michael Baker was hit by a pitch and advanced to third on a double by Brady Wright. Kobe Rowling brought both runners in with a single down the right field line as the Cats concluded the 5th inning, cutting the Otters' lead down to 1. The Cats would go on to score 3 more runs and steal the game, securing the win 5-4. In Game 3, on the verge of marking the series upset, the Cats handed the ball to junior left-handed pitcher Bruno Condit. The Otters struck early against Condit, putting up 3 runs in the first inning. The Cats responded and got on the board in the second inning, concluding 3-1. The Cats would build off the momentum as they loaded the bases with 3 hit-by-pitches in the third. However, it seemed that whenever the Cats scored, the Otters had an immediate answer, leading the Cats to drop the third game of the series 9-7. The Cats started Game 4 by celebrating their 8 seniors for senior night. Carson Case, Stephon Foley, Juan Nunez, Rocco Borelli, Aaron McCurley, Keani Coloma, Jesse Gadd, and Ramon Macias. The first 3 innings were quiet as neither team scored. The Otters exploded in the 4th inning and put up 6 runs. The Cats unraveled again in the 8th inning as the Otters scored 7 more runs. Despite the Cats scoring 3 runs, the Otters took the finale with a dominant victory 13-3. With one final series left, Coach Dave Taylor wants to see the team be happy with what they've accomplished this season, despite them being on the verge of missing the playoffs. The Cats will close out conference play in a 4-game series against Cal State East Bay at Pioneer Baseball Field starting on Thursday at 3 p.m.
Be on the lookout for the spring 2026 edition of The Orion Magazine. Copies of this Orion News print edition can be found on campus at the Bell Memorial Union, Tehama, Plumas, and Dining Halls, and throughout Chico at places like Stobel Coffee, The Naked Lounge, Woodstock's Pizza, and Upper Crust Bakery and Cafe. This week's authors include Chris Hutton, Jameson Leung, Maya Van Lanningham, and Cody Rowan. This week's narrators are Hannah Cabral, Cody Rowan, and it has been my pleasure producing the weekly report for the last couple of years. I am honored to have worked with such a fine team as the Orion News. My name's Kepler, signing off.
Ninth Circuit blocks California limits on anonymous immigration agents. Written by Nigel Duera and Cal Matters. Published April 24th, 2026. Hey, it's Faye from Game Ant Play. This article is brought to you by The Observer. A federal appeals court on Wednesday struck down California's requirement that masked federal agents identify themselves, a blow to the state's ongoing resistance to the Trump administration's deportation program. A Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals panel handed down a ruling prohibiting California from enforcing a section of the 2025 law that mandates federal law enforcement officers visibly display identification while carrying out their duties. The law was destined to face critical scrutiny from the federal judiciary. A 1890 Supreme Court case provides that a state cannot prosecute federal law enforcement officers acting in the course of their duties. The law also ran headlong into the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution, which holds that the states may not regulate the operations of the federal government. Governor Gavin Newsom signed it in connection with the law that banned federal immigration agents from wearing masks. The Trump administration sued to challenge both of them. On February 19th, a federal judge issued an injunction against the mask law. The new ruling by a 3-0 decision focuses on the identification requirements. If a state law directly regulates the conduct of the United States, it is void irrespective of whether the regulated activities are essential to federal functions or operations, and irrespective of the degree to which the state law interferes with the federal functions or operations, wrote Judge Mark J. Bennett. California's lawyers argued that even if the law does violate the Supremacy Clause, the court should have also considered the state government's concerns about federal immigration enforcement's effect on public safety. Quote, "We decline to do so because the United States has shown a likelihood that the act violates the Supremacy Clause. It has also shown that both the public interest and balance of equities tip decisively in favor of a preliminary injunction." End quote from Bennett. Democrats passed the law called the No Vigilantes Act to rein in the federal officers who showed up in masks without visible identification as they carried out the Trump administration's immigration crackdown. Lawmakers this year are advancing more bills targeting the administration's immigration agents, including proposals that would bar them from employment in California law enforcement agencies and a measure that would make it easier for people to sue federal agents over civil rights violations. Acting U.S. Attorney General Todd Blanche crowed about the Ninth Circuit ruling on social media. Quote, "This Department of Justice stands in unwavering and total support of the brave men and women of ICE who put their lives on the line every day to enforce our immigration laws and keep American citizens safe," he wrote. Today's legal victory in the Ninth Circuit halts enforcement of California's mass ban for ICE agents and is a big win to protect law enforcement. End quote from Todd Blanche. Once again, this article is brought to you by the Sacramento Observer, and this is Faye for Zephyr News.
This is David Foose reporting for Zephyr News. California Governor Gavin Newsom proclaimed this week as National Apprenticeship Week. Governor Newsom also proclaimed this past Tuesday, April 28th, as Workers' Memorial Day in honor of the 195 workers killed while working on California's highways. The governor ordered flags to be flown at half staff over the state capitol and all Caltrans buildings. Governor Newsom appointed Marie Ussery of Orland to the Veterinary Medical Board. Ussery was a registered veterinary technician and manager at Mid Valley Veterinarian Hospital from 2010 to 2026. She's been a member of the Multidisciplinary Advisory Committee of the Veterinarian Medical Board since 2021 and the California Veterinary Medical Reserve Corps. The City of Chico Park and Playground Commission announced that visitors to Upper Bidwell Park will have to pay parking fees for the first time starting this summer. Cost will be $2 per day or $25 for an annual pass. Parking will remain free for people with disabilities. Park and Playground Commission also voted unanimously to allow alcohol to be served during special events at the Chico Creek Nature Center, for example, weddings. Superior Court of California, County of Butte, announced that it will recognize May 1st as Law Day. This year's theme is the rule of law and the American dream, representing the fundamental principle that no person is above the law. To mark the occasion, the court will host its elementary school mock trial program at the North Butte County Courthouse in Chico, where two local fifth grade classes will participate in a theater-style mock trial of a criminal case using a script written by a group of Chico High School students. This is David Foose for Zephyr News.
Zephyr News is produced by Trevor Parks, Lorenz Weissel, and KZFR volunteers. Listeners may send tips for stories to news@kzfr.org or by using the Submit a Story icon on kzfr.org. This program is made possible by the financial support of listeners like you. You can support KZFR's journalistic endeavors by visiting kzfr.org/donate. Subscribe to Zephyr News on your favorite podcast platform and share your thoughts on social media. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next week.
Well, thank you so much for joining us right here on Face the Music tonight. So let's just get it going. You are listening to KZFR FM 90.1 right here in Chico. We are listener-supported community radio. And again, this is Face the Music. All female artists for the next 2.5 hours till the guys come in with basically the blues.
I'm gonna tell you again now if you're still listening there. If you're driving